Hi everybody. Hi. I'm sorry I missed last time. I have heard Helen on that subject before. Now before I start, I'd just like to read from Psalm 137. I'm not going to talk about it, but I just want to read it. By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and wept, when we remembered Zion. On the willows there we hung up our lyres, for there our captors required of us songs, and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing Yahweh's song in a foreign land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand wither. Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not set Jerusalem above my highest joy. Remember, O Yahweh, against the Edomites, the day of Jerusalem, how they said, raise it, down to its foundations. O daughter of Babylon, you devastator, happy shall he be who requites you with what you have done to us. Happy shall he be who takes your little ones and dashes them against the rock. Okay, I'm not going to talk about that last verse. I can't get my head around it, but I can understand some of the feelings they had for what had happened to them. And they're the natural feelings that we have. And I chose to use Yahweh there because of what Debbie just said about this contest between the one true God, the God of heaven and earth, compared to all these other gods. And that sort of comes out more in the story of Ezekiel as well. Not that I'm going to talk about that. So, in 597 BC, Jehoiakim, king of Judah, was defeated and taken captive by the Babylonians, along with the flower of Judah, the elite, the craftsmen, the nobility and priests, among whom was Ezekiel. Now, there's no time to talk about all the traumas they'd been through, war, and dislocation, but we get some of that from that psalm that we just read. And obviously it would have affected them in their life forever. These exiles settled in Babylon, many of them expecting the exile to be short. They'd been told to build houses and plant vineyards. No short-term projects, because it wasn't going to be short. Some of them would have thought that God had abandoned them and saw no sense in keeping their old religious practices. And for others, their idolatry, which had proved Judah's undoing, was deeply rooted. Ezekiel the priest was called to be a prophet in Babylon in the fifth year of the captivity. He lived in a Jewish settlement on the river Kibar, which is a large irrigation canal off the Euphrates. And having seen those pictures of Babylon today, it helps put it in your mind what life could have been like. And briefly, the book of Ezekiel, we have chapters 1 to 24. Those prophecies in the early section are given before the destruction of Jerusalem. Chapters 25 to 32 denounce Judah's mocking neighbours. And the last section is full of consolation and hope for a restoration. The first three chapters are about Ezekiel's call and commission. The vision in chapter 1, which you probably all remember, of the storm and the chariots and the wheels and some very cosmic looking things, emphasised the transcendent nature of God. And in contrast, Ezekiel uses the humble expression of himself, son of man, one like Adam. God tells him he's being sent to a nation of rebels who won't be listening. His task is to be a watchman, one warning of danger, and people will either heed him or not, but each is ultimately responsible for his or her own fate. Ezekiel was a strange prophet. I'm sure we remember those Sunday school stories of what he did. Sometimes he spoke God's word to the people and sometimes he acted it. Ezekiel's dramatic signs are so bizarre and extreme at times, he was accused of insanity. Here's some of the things he did as a sign and symbol of the message from God. He cooked his food over a fire of human excrement as a symbol of the fact that those besieged by Nebuchadnezzar would be forced to eat unclean food. He doesn't mourn when his wife dies in order to illustrate the fact that God will not mourn the loss of his temple. He binds himself in ropes, then lies on his left side 390 days to symbolise the years of exile with the kingdom of Israel, and then lies on his right side for 40 days, symbolising the length of Judah's captivity. None of those times were actually the true number of years, but that's what he did. I used to worry about that when I was a kid. How could he lie down for 390 days? I'm sure he only did it for a short time each day, but nevertheless it was certainly a talking point. He shaved his hair and beard and divided into three. One third he burnt, another third he chopped up with his sword, and the third third was scattered to the wind. He just kept a few hairs and bound them up in his robe. This was to symbolise that a third of the people would perish by famine and pestilence, a third by violence, and a third would be exiled to Babylon, and only a few would God allow to escape. The earlier prophecies are harsh and stern. God had intended this doom to come upon his people for their unfaithfulness. They must stop yearning for a return to Jerusalem and face reality. This was punishment they had earned. Jerusalem would be utterly destroyed, despite the notion that it was forever the place of worship. Nor was God being unfair, as they complained. It gave God no pleasure to punish the evil. As soon as they realised the error of their ways and humbly turned to God, he would bless them. He punished evil and rewarded good. Is that unfair? Nor need the exiles think they were suffering for their father's sins. God punished each individual for his or her own wrongdoing, not anyone else's sin. The sooner the Jews realised they had brought this suffering upon themselves, the better. Then they would turn back to God and he would welcome them back with forgiveness and blessing. I just want to say one thing about Ezekiel's denunciation of Jerusalem. They contain the most lurid and violent language in the Bible, and those images are very disturbing and nightmarish. Perhaps there was some reason in saying that he had some kind of insanity, but he certainly saw some awful things. The exiles hated hearing such things. They ignored the prophet. But when they heard of the destruction of Jerusalem, all their foolish hopes were gone. In 586, after a dreadful 18-month siege, the walls of Jerusalem were finally breached, and King Zedekiah was blinded after he saw his sons slaughtered, then chained and taken to Babylon with other deportees. Following this dreadful news, Ezekiel is no longer the prophet of gloom, but a consoling father, full of courage and hope. He turned his harsh words to the cruel neighbours who gloated and rejoiced at their calamity, to Ammon, Moab, Edom, Philistia, Tyre and Egypt. And now the exiles were ready to listen to him, as they realised he was their only hope and the true spokesman of God. They now began to learn the hard lesson that their fate was God's doing and not the triumph of the Babylonian gods. In his own good time, God would make himself known to all nations as the only true God. Ezekiel likened God to a good shepherd who would gather his people together and lead them back to their own land. Purified by their suffering, they would serve him faithfully, dwelling in their own fruitful land in peace and plenty. In the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones, there is the imagery of resurrection, symbolic of the hope that God would raise up his people from the death of exile and restore them to new life in their homeland. Ezekiel's message gives a wonderful sense of the holiness of God, and it follows that his people must be holy. Always, God is ready to forgive. He would give them new hearts filled with his spirit of righteousness. Restored to their homeland, they would be a holy people, worshipping God in the temple that Ezekiel saw in vision, in the holy city worthy of God. In the meantime, Ezekiel showed the exiles they could still have a relationship with God outside the chosen land. He had saved them from despair and kept them true to the God of their fathers and laid the foundation of their future.